Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the August 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
But the United States Department of Agriculture says neither the corn nor the soybean crop in the U.S. is all that great, and next year's ending stocks already look tight. We'll find out what that might mean for the coming months and how the outside markets have been influencing Chicago, too, today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago, Illinois, Dan Bossi. Our panelists today in studio include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. Well, let's open today's discussion, folks, with this question. USDA really surprised the bean market, well, a bit, with its, let's be clear, 3.056 billion bushel production number for soybeans. Today, with cooler August temps and rain on the way, is that number getting bigger or smaller? Kurt Kimmel.
I'll say stable for right now. It's going to definitely help in some areas. Beans are phenomenal plant. They can hang in there and get some moisture to come through, but we'll have to actually see if the bean plant does respond. We believe the heat's done considerable damage and it's been in tremendous stress. It's going to take a lot more moisture and favorable weather through the rest of the growing season to put on additional pods.
Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Yep, I think it all depends just exactly where you are and if you've been fortunate enough to get the rain. The one thing that when we look at that a little over 3 billion bushel crop, we've got to recognize that that report yesterday was unbelievable in terms of the deviation. There's 11.4% either way. We could go to a 2.7, we could go to a 3.4. So, you know, it just says to me that there are an awful lot of questions everywhere, and like any time, August makes the bean market.
And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
I don't think the quantities of rain are going to be significant enough as dry as the ground is, and it's just going to take a lot of rain. It's going to take consistent rains. One rain's just not going to make it.
We'll recap now the USDA reports that were released on Thursday morning of this past week. Crop production numbers show a forecast for soybeans of 3.056, 306 if you want to round her up, down 8% from last year. That's based on August 1 conditions. Yields expected to average 41.4 bushels to the acre, down 2.1 bushels from last year. Area for harvest in the U.S. forecasted 73.8 million acres. That's down less than 1% from June and down 4% from 2010. The planted area for the nation estimated at 75 million acres, down fractionally from June. The soybeans ended the week with a high in the August contract at $13.50, a low at $12.86. Settlement price there up 5.5 cents on the week at $13.37. New crop November beans at $13.34¾, down a penny and a quarter. It depends on where you are, you tell me, Jackie Vakes, as to what what your bean crop might look like. So how do you handle it from the east to the west, and what difference does it make, really?
How do you handle it from the east
marketing
to the west?
Marketing, that is.
Okay. Well, I think in most places, the only way you can handle it right now, unless you're confident that that you're going to have lots to deliver, is use some type of a put strategy. I can't see it any other way. I have guys looking at cash. We're in the same old range we've been in for how long on beans right now? you know, that $12.80 to $14 level, and we just can't seem to get out of it. We saw a lot of Brazilians selling yesterday. So with the economic conditions that we have, I just think that you have to be conservative, and you have to make sure that you manage your risk. And we've got decent prices here to manage risk at.
Chuck, every year on the planet, we have two crops for soybeans, one in North America, one in South America. Is the job of the market at this point to ration the bean crop in North America and to make sure that beans are planted in larger quantities in South America?
Well, I think the demand side of the equation from China is still there. I think the uncertainty over our crop size is going to lead to stability, a range-bound a crop here in the United States. But certainly we need production. The South American producers are going to be at full speed ahead. I think the price is right for them to grow as many bushels of beans as possible.
Will that limit the upside potential in the marketplace?
Well, it might cap it at some time. As Jackie said, Brazil was in there heavily selling. But, too, China is going to be a big buyer here. They've got to be a buyer. The South American supplies are dwindled down. We're in the next available supplies of beans here. And as we go in this fall and get a handle on our production number and start to focus on the southern South American hemisphere, if they don't have favorable weather and perfect crop and more acres, then the bean market could get quite exciting this winter.
When does China normally come into the bean market in the recent years in the United States?
Well, it's sporadic. I can't give an exact day, but it seems they lay dormant, wait for the opportunity, and then they pounce on the market and take advantage of lower prices here. I would say if we would start to see a late summer rally here, they'd probably want to get some more inventory booked because they've been sleeping or say, laying dormant here for a while.
I think one thing to look at that is the DDGs, and meal is a substitute, or DDGs are substitute back and forth. So I think that's another positive for beans because if the corn crop's short and the DDGs are really short, in essence, that means a positive outlook for the meal market.
Let's turn our attention to the corn crop at this time. Production this week forecast at 12.9 billion bushels. That's 4% larger than last year. It's, if realized, the third largest production on record for the United States. Based on conditions, of course, as of the first day of August, yields are expected to average 153 bushels to the acre, 0.2 bushels higher than the 2010 average, and the fourth highest yield on record. That's right, the fourth highest yield on record. Let me say that again. Acreage planted for all purposes estimated at 92.3 million acres. That's unchanged from June. Area harvested per grain forecast at 84.4 million acres, down less than 1% from June. Still 4% bigger than the 2010 corn crop. Did those numbers, when they came out, surprise you at all, Jackie Vakes?
Well, I was surprised to see the USDA take 5.7 bushels off on the August report. I guess I expected it to be a little more conservative than that. And yet I think that their pressure is to try and do something that looks right. And this looks right. I mean, with the extreme heat that we've had, there too, you know, they had a 10.7% deviation. Come on. I mean, you know, that crop could get, the yield could go down to 136.6 potentially on the bottom side. It's not going to go to 169.4 on the top, I don't believe. And so we don't know. I do know that out of the last 18 years, in the 9 years that we've declined, we declined again when we got into the September report. And then we actually declined 5 years in the January report, even beyond that. So this is a big step on their part. I was shocked.
Kurt, if these numbers come to fruition, USDA is now predicting that the ending stocks, by the time we get to the fall of 2012, will be 714 million bushels. That's in that 5% stocks-to-use ratio range. It's really tight, and we're starting out there, not finishing there. It makes for an exciting year, I would think.
Yeah, definitely tight. You're looking at pipeline supply, so the crop's going to have to come out in the field in a timely fashion. They're going to have to bid it away from the producer to keep the demand flow going here. So it's going to be tight, and plus two, if we stay dry into this winter, it's going to put pressure on this 2000 crop to be ideal too.
Now, they got there by dropping usage down 340 million bushels. Anything that you would argue with in those numbers?
I think the livestock, with the decline in the cattle herd, from several reasons, and I think that's a very valid, you know, some loss in livestock. As we go forward, you know, they'll have to prove, you know, demand from the world seems to still be there, especially with a cheaper dollar. So I guess we can accept a little smaller demand next year. And if we go high enough in price, we're going to ration somebody out of usage.
Chuck, you are a farmer there in the northwestern part of the state of Indiana. Did USDA on August 1st get the number right for your region? And how far has it declined or gone up, either one, since then?
Our region was 5 bushel less than last year at the same date. I would have to say that we think the decline's probably bigger than that. From looking at our crop last year, at that point, it looked much better than where we are at this point with this report.
And what are your Illinois farmers saying about the 170-bushel yield average in the state?
Well, anybody around here certainly isn't agreeing with that. In the northern part of Illinois, where they've gotten some rains, yes. I can buy into in the 170s, but anywhere south of here or even right here, I think everybody's very concerned about being in the 150s.
Guys would be happy to have 150. Yeah. Even in the north, I see guys that's got problems up there. They had that windstorm, some green snap, and the heat still zapped it pretty good. Even though it looks green and good, guys are going out in it and actually pulling back shucks and coming out sick.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. The crop you see from the road is not necessarily what the crop really is.
Have you been out?
Yeah, well, that's why we were the lowest yield in the survey at 151. We were that number. And we have an agronomist in our office, and he works with us on our farm and many of the farmers we work with. So we felt this a long time ago, and it goes back really to excessive rainfalls in the spring. That was a key signal to us. We knew a lot of the crop had lost a lot of nitrogen. We applied a lot extra on our farm. It only does so much good, but we saw the damage coming a long time ago, Todd.
Corn futures in Chicago this week had a high in the September at $7.08, a low at $6.58.5, a settlement price at $7.01¾, up 8¾. December, a settlement price 11½ cents higher at $7.14½. Does 11½ cents on a 153 crop seem like enough to you?
No. 11 cents, man, we're going to start moving bucks and It's going to be huge.
So was it just simply the outside market this week that was so volatile that capped the move?
A lot of people were wore out Friday. Up one day, down the next, up one day, down the next. They talk about getting seasick more than one way.
Well, I think when you just look at it, you know, anybody who's watching the outside markets and have looked at the Dow, some of the money came out of the market and some has moved over to make margin calls in the Dow because of the extreme moves we've had there. You've got investors who are just plain nervous. And your outside money, like the fund money that comes in and gives us that extra boost a lot of times, is kind of standing on the sidelines. They came in and bought quite a bit yesterday. But today, everything was very, very quiet. And I think they're all waiting for the weekend to see what's going to break next over in Europe someplace.
I think that held the market back in the grain side of the equation from really extending gains. I think it's a time of great volatility, and I think businesses, end users are very cautious. I think this report woke them up and opened some eyes, but the outsides are a heavy influence in what's going on in any business nowadays.
Mm. Well, I think a lot of people thought the debt ceiling and getting the debt ceiling passed was going to do it, and it was just going to take off and go. Didn't work that way.
USDA on their average cash price for the year moved the bottom end up $6.20. They moved it up 70 cents. They moved the top end 70 cents higher as well to $7.20. So still a dollar range, but it's a higher by 70 cents than it was just a month ago. If we're up on that top end of the range in the cash grain market, are you a willing seller or not?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've been slow sellers or flexible sellers has been our game plan for a long time. But there's a level up here where you have to take advantage of it, whether you make a cash sale with a call option or you go to the put side of the equation. These values up here with the volatility and the outside markets, I think you have to have a plan to do something with it once you know what your crop size is.
Yeah, you got to know where your crop size is and where are you in your marketing process, too. And if you're in areas getting hammered by this heat, it's just awful hard to make additional sales not knowing where you're at.
Well, and when you see some of the very attractive basis levels that we've got for delivery by the middle of September, I think we're going to see guys actually try and take some grain off early and pay drying costs to take advantage of that.
What did you see in the global numbers that made interest for you out of those WASD figures? Anything that touched off or sparked anything on?
Well, I think it's the Chinese production number. I still think it's kind of rich. They've been experiencing some weather problems, too, in some of their key growing areas. So I think that kind of surprised me that they didn't start to fine-tune some of those.
Well, and I think, too, when you saw the wheat carryout number for the world go up as much as it did, that was certainly not expected at all. So, you know, that puts a question in everybody's mind as to how competitive they're going to be able to be against our wheat.
Were you there with the wheat, too?
I think so, but both corn and beans are smaller, so there's a positive there.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson, Kurt Kimmel out of Bates Commodities all will return here on Commodity Week in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Dan Bossi. He's the president of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. You can always visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post agricultural programming each and every business day of the year.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey in the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It should come as no surprise that we just came off the sixth warmest July on record for Illinois. The statewide average temperature was 80.1 degrees, 4.3 degrees above average. July rainfall totals range from an incredible 19.2 inches near Galena to only 0.6 inches at Aledo. After the scorching temperatures and high humidity levels the last few weeks, this week was a little closer to normal with some relief from the humidity. In fact, by the end of the week, nighttime temperatures were almost fall-like with the lows in the mid to upper 50s in most locations. The northern and southern thirds of the state received between 1/2 and 1.5 inches of rain this week, but central Illinois missed out again on the rains. The big news this week is that the U.S. Drought Monitor added a band of moderate drought from southeastern Iowa through central Illinois and on into Indiana. This came from the combination of less than an inch of rain in many locations since July 1 and the excessive heat that we just experienced. Milder temperatures will prevail through next week with highs in the 80s and the low 80s and lows in the 60s. The next chance of rain will be next Friday. Warmer and drier conditions are expected during the week after next. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm State Climatologist Jim Angel.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the August 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. Visit us online at willag.org. Our panelists in studio include Jackie Banks of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line today, Dan Bossi. He is the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago, Illinois. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. I'm sure it was interesting from your vantage point in Chicago watching the volatility in New York. How much of an influence did it have on the trade this week at the CME Group?
Well, you know, Todd, we did finish the week better, so I guess if we were on vacation all week, you wouldn't notice too much in the corn or wheat markets. Beans were slightly lower, but no, each day was different, and the hedge fund community, I think, drove a lot of it. This is black box trading and large traders, hedge funds, if you will, playing in our markets, and they left big footprints during the week.
Well, you think, as we go forward, if the crop ends up being smaller in corn, one of some of the negatives out there that could stop the price from rallying to really high levels?
You know, I really don't know. I think the report told us that we have a blueprint, and we all should have learned from last year's market and what's going to be happening in the year ahead. My only problem is if our firm here, Ag Resource, believes the yield will be under 150, how do I ration that 750 to 950 million bushels of demand? So it's going to take high prices for an extended period of time. We're just not certain if it's ethanol or livestock, the two sectors, and which one has to get so hard to get us our end stocks where they're at least at pipeline.
Well, that leads right into the question I was going to ask you, Dan. You know, when I looked at the changes that they made in demand for yesterday, how do you feel about the reduction in the ethanol and the exports both?
Well, the big thing that we see, of course, exports were reduced because if we look at our friends in the former Soviet Union, we trade was 27.5 million metric tons. That's up from last year's 8.7. That's a huge jump of 18.8 million metric tons. So undoubtedly, the rest of the world's got to feed wheat because there's no corn around. In terms of ethanol, I'm having a little trouble with that because we're exporting way too much ethanol to Brazil. We're calculating that 8% of our ethanol production as of today is going to Brazil. If that were to continue, we think an ethanol production number in a year ahead of 5.1 or 5.2 billion, even with the reduction in the blender's credit as of December 31st, is reasonable. So we haven't figured out how this rationing is going to entail, Jackie. Right now we're trying to get our arms around crop size, and unfortunately we're still dropping lower each week.
And after seeing the report, what type of price parameters can you put on December corn futures now, you think?
We see downside very good support at 650 to 670. The hedge fund community does not have much long corn in terms of their positioning. We think the livestock feeders are very poor coverage beyond the middle of September. Ethanol is probably the same way. So on breaks, you'll find those traders or users stepping forward. On the upside, we're thinking we have at least got to test last year's high at $8. I think we made it to $7.99 in June, so $8 is our first upside target down the road, $9 not inconceivable. How quickly we get there probably depends upon the October crop report in terms of what it finds in harvested acreage and yield. I think that's the real big number ahead of us as we think forward.
Do you watch the crude oil market very much, and what kind of target do you have, either upside or downside, for a barrel of crude?
I do, Todd, and we kind of see that this week's bottom at $75, give or take a dollar or two, is probably about it. We've been telling our producer clients maybe booking some diesel fuel is not a bad thing to do. And I think on the upside, we see resistance kind of where we broke down in that $91 to $95 a barrel area. The world economy is probably not strong enough to sustain anything above $95 to $96 at this point. But we do have to watch, of course, the printing presses pretty carefully. If the dollar breaks out to the downside, maybe we'll adjust that upside target slightly. But we'll try to determine that in the weeks ahead in terms of what the EU can come up with some bailout packages for their banks.
Is that a range in which the oil companies would not bother to use their RINs? And I'm thinking about ethanol usage at this point.
It is. We think, at least at this point, to meet. First of all, we expect that the blender's 45 cents will remain until the December 31st. We don't think congressional legislative action will end that until that time. Thereafter, we think it'll depend on where crude oil is. We're now forecasting at around 89 to 92 for December. That means that in the first quarter of next year, that means that, generally speaking, RINs can be used but not in style. So it all depends in terms of where that Brazilian ethanol demand is at that point and where sugar prices are in terms of where we believe that the ethanol productive side will be. But that Brazilian demand is expected to continue just because we don't see sugar prices backing below 18 cents, which would make, let's say, a Brazilian producer like Cozon profitable.
As we move into harvest, and you mentioned that some haven't covered yet, if we get a very bullish USDA report on a smaller crop size, do you think the market will get real aggressive and try to get those bushels, because they know at harvest there's free bushels out there that aren't going maybe into storage? Will they really come after it then if that happens?
Well, I think we learned a lot of lessons in basis trading this year. And so, yes, if people have availability of storage, I think they will be aggressive trying to buy up bushels at harvest, knowing that if we have these kind of shortages going forward and the big battle for acreage that will be involving this winter and spring, that a dollar over premiums will work. What we haven't really figured out, though, on basis, if we look at where corn is in the eastern corn belt, there's just not much to be had in terms of old crop supply. We now have a short new crop. How will the west versus the east and basis relationships play out? Our stocks report at the end of December will help in that determination, but if there's going to be shortages, it really looks to be in the eastern corn belt this year.
What do you think, Dan? You know, there's an awful lot of talk about QE3 coming out. You know, you mentioned the printing presses. What kind of an impact do you think that would have?
You know, Jackie, I kind of think that we did a half QE3 this week with Bernanke's, of course, decision to keep rates for 2 years. I think it was a brilliant move because now all of my hedge fund or bank clients can't borrow at the discount window at 0 or just 0.25% and then reinvest it in treasuries. They have to put that money to work and take on more risk. So already we're hearing that commodity investment will be featured as we head into the fourth final quarter of the year and much of 2011. Of course, gold is a star performer this year. Commodities, though, on a general basket case or asset class, is not far behind. And so I think there's going to be investor appetite, if you will, for the entire commodity and ag sector as we look forward to 2012.
Dan, what's your thought on the bean market?
Well, you know, the bean, we're a little surprised beans are trading at a 1.8 ratio versus corn. We think that ratio should probably be closer to 2-1 based on what we see today. Our feeling being is that the bean crop is still shrinking, not as fast as corn, but still declining. If that is indeed the case, we have tight supplies. We think the Chinese are starting to get very close bought on supplies. The meal market over there is rather heated. So we don't see beans falling much below 13, 13.20. And really, as we start fighting for acres and talking about next year, the bean market really has got to keep up with corn. And how do we buy an extra 3 to 5 million acres of ag land next year when we can't take it from hay or minor crops? So it's going to be a very interesting spring time frame next year, particularly if La Nina comes into play and that Southern Plains drought is exacerbated or continues for another 6 months.
The U.S. farmland market has been very strong. You told me that the investors will be looking, outside investors that is, will be looking for safe havens, roughly speaking, but places that their money will earn more. Farmland appears at this point to be one of those places, even at the higher prices. Will there be more competition than there has been for farmland to this point in the last couple of years? It's been mostly farmers. Will the investors be back in a big way?
I think they are, Todd, though I'll tell you the big thing we keep thinking about is this super committee, if you will, that's supposed to back into a budget deal and look at tax legislation. If indeed we change capital gains rates from 15% to something higher, I'm now talking long-term capital gains, you know, that may cause some of our older farmers to think about selling some land and taking some profit. So that's the missing element, if you will, in terms of a sustained rally in farmland and availability going forward in the next year.
As we go forward, do you see any government intervention at these high prices, such as letting out CRP acres, any of those things in the future that, you know, could help the attempt to alleviate some of this pressure on, you know, growing a crop?
I hear no movement on that at all at the moment. There's so many other issues circulating around Washington. Food is not a front-page issue at the moment. In fact, if you listen to CNBC, when the crop report came in, they hardly mentioned it. And so it's the stock market, it's the economy, it's jobs in a political election that's driving the bus. Food and our ag prices just aren't there yet.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Dan.
You're welcome, Todd.
Dan Bossi is the president of Ag Resource Company. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
Well, let's hope we're somewhat surprised that things aren't as bad as we might think they are out in the fields. We're going to see some early harvest start here in a couple of weeks, so we're going to get some early data and hope for the best.
Jackie Bakes of Stewart Peterson.
I guess the best thing to do is stay safe and stay on top of the markets.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
It's a dynamic market, and it's going to continue to be a dynamic market for some time to come. The decision is whether you want to participate or not.
Here are some of the rest of the numbers that wrapped up in Chicago for the week. Soybeans finished the August contract at 13.37. It was up 5.5 cents. November beans at 13.34¾, down a penny and a quarter. Wheat futures finished the September contract at 7.02½. It was up 23.5 cents. July at 7.83¼, a penny and a half lower for the day, or for the week. Live cattle futures finished the August at 377.5 higher at 117.90. Feeders at 135.85, up $2.15 for the week, and the lean hogs at 107.45 were up $2.52.5. Visit us online at willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.